Good morning. Today's daf and ksuvos pei vav. We're on pei hem and beis. We're towards the bottom of the amud. Okay, in the ninth parak of the Masechta, and so our discussion continues to be nechse melug. We continue to discuss various aspects about nechse melug as we started just a couple days ago this ninth parak. So let's just pick it up where we left off yesterday. Amalei Rava le bereid Rabbi Chiya bar Avin. Okay, so Rava says the following to his son. Sorry, not his son. The son of Rabbi Chiya bar Avin ta imalach milsa malyasa da have amar avucha. So new, let's hear some chidushim from your father. His father was a mechadesh, and so let's say it over. Had amar Shmuel. So let's start off with the statement of Shmuel, which is the following: Amocher shtarchov lechavero. So what do? You sell paper. I say paper over here. I mean a note. In other words, right? Okay, good. Well, let's call it paper. So you sell paper. And so obviously the buyer of the paper is now buying, so he's buying debt, and good for him. And v'chazer umachlo. And now what happens is that the seller of the paper is going to be mochel. He's going to forgive the loan, so mochel. So the loan is in fact going to be forgiven, even though there was a buyer of that paper. Now hopefully at this point in time, everyone should be offended. And everyone should wonder, right, a number of things. Ethically, is that right? Can a person do that? So the answer is unequivocally no. Of course it's not right. If you're selling something of what is perceived value, or real value, and then the person, after having sold it, so now you can reduce its value to zero, so that's not right. So we can all say clearly, unequivocally, that ethically that's wrong. Okay, but I'm going to bypass that point, even though that's a really important point. But in other words, but how can you do that? Meaning, if you're selling the paper, aren't you selling the debt? Meaning, isn't the debt now owned by somebody else? What right do you have now? What ability do you have to go ahead and to forgive it after you sold? So that's a wonderful question. And the Gemara doesn't explain. The Gemara never explains. In fact, this statement of Shmuel we've gone over numerous times throughout Shas. We're going to be hearing this multiple times. And so I'm comfortable saying it just simply because, Baruch Hashem, we've said this numerous times, but how does it work? Okay, so we'll go with a classic, and that is that we're going to go over Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is quoted as saying as follows. Interesting, by the way, that Rabbeinu Tam is not in the Tosos. Rabbeinu Tam is quoted by other Rishonim, the Sephardic Rishonim also. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So Rabbeinu Tam says as follows, that when you're a malva, so when you're a creditor, so you now have two shibudim. Let's look at it from the perspective of the lova. Okay, so as far as the borrower is concerned, so now he owes. Okay, good. So there are two shibudim that the malva has on the lova. Okay, one shibud is what's called, we're going to call a shibud aguf. In other words, the malva says to the lova, look, you owe me money. You owe me money. And so that is one shibud that he has. And the other shibud that he has is shibud nechasim. Shibud nechasim meaning that in the event that you default, so I have a lien on your property. So there are really two shibudim. There are two strengths that the malva has over the lova. One is that you owe me money, right? With the focus on the word you owe me money. And the number two is that in the event that you default, your property now is going to be indebted to me. So when you're selling that debt, so which aspect are you selling? So Rabbeinu Tam says, what you're selling is the shibud nechasim, but you're not selling the shibud aguf. Meaning the property now is indebted to the debt. So that is what's being sold. However, writes the Rabbeinu Tam, however, the shibud haguf, that is maintained, that is retained by the malva. So that means to say that even after you sell the paper, what you still retain, even after having sold the debt, is that you still have your shibud haguf. Okay, so now, I understand, but we have to explain the Gemara. I understand it's hard to understand, but we have to explain the Gemara, meaning the Gemara says it works, and I'm just right, correct. And so now when you sell that debt, so what did you sell? You only sold the Shibud Nechasim. You did not sell the Shibud Aguf, and so therefore you still have bailus on that debt. And if you want to forgive that debt, you have the right to forgive the debt. Now again, I'm not talking about ethics. Ethically, it's wrong. And in just a little bit, we're going to talk about liability. The Gemara, that's coming up in the Gemara. But right now, we're just talking about the effectiveness, the idea that you can go ahead and you could do so. Now, okay. So you could do so right here. Okay. So good. So that's the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam explaining the statement of Shmuel. So once again, let's go over the basic halacha, and that is that when you sell debt, so even though someone went ahead and spent money on purchasing that debt, nevertheless, you, the malva, and the seller of that paper, so you could be mochel. And on top of that, we're going to add the following. Not only could you be mochel, but the afilu yorish mochel. We're back in the Gemara. We are on Pehei Amud Beis. We are four lines from the bottom of the Amud. The afilu yorish mochel, and even the yorish is going to be mochel. So that means to say that even though the malva has now passed away, and so he had a shibud aguf, that shibud aguf now is going to be inherited by his kid. And so his kid could also go ahead and forgive that note. So modish mo be machnes shachov le bala ve chazro machla, so shena machol men mesh yado ki yada. So far, so we haven't had a chiddush yet. Even though, it's so funny, I say we haven't had a chiddush yet. This idea of forgiving debt is such a chiddush. But you understand, though, in the context of our Gemara, Rava says to the son of Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin, knew your father said chiddushim. I want to hear a chiddush from your father. So over here, we start with the statement of Shmuel. That's not a chiddush. Everybody knows that. It is difficult to understand, but everybody knows it, that you can go ahead and you can forgive debt after having sold it. Okay, that's already a chiddush. But that's not why Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin was commenting on. And even the idea that the Yorish is going to be have the ability to forgive the debt, that's also a chiddush. But again, that was already brought to us by Shmuel. So what's his additional point? His additional point is the following. And that is that a woman comes into a marriage with paper. In other words, she has account receivables. And so what does she do with account receivables? She puts it into the marriage. Okay, how is it structured in the marriage? It could be nichse milug, it could be in a dunya. It doesn't matter. She brings it into the marriage. What do we know about any properties that she brings into the marriage? Now, I know this is not property, but it's an asset, right? So what is it? So as we already discussed numerous times, just a couple days ago, partnership. So what you have now is that husband and wife now over in Nichse Malug are partners over those assets. So now that he's a partner over that asset, so let's say that account receivable that she brought into the marriage, she went and she sold that. Okay, and so now can she be mochel? Here's a chiddush. She can't be mochel. Why? In other words, a malva could be mochel after having sold his paper. So why not? Because partner, exactly. Because now she has a partner, and so now she's no longer the sole proprietor of that paper. That paper now is going to be jointly owned by her and him. Right, because that's the nature of any assets that go into a marriage, and therefore, mibneshi yadoki yada is basically partnership. They have now a partnership over those assets, and therefore, she can't be mochel. Okay, good. That's a chiddush. Now, krevasa the Rav Nachman's vinte luksuvasa b'tovasana. So the relative of Rav Nachman did the following. Okay, this is going to be complicated, but boys, it's going to be interesting. So what happens is that she sells her ksuva. Okay, so are you allowed to sell your ksuva? The answer is yes. In other words, what is a ksuva? It's paper. In other words, now, is it speculative? Oh, boys, it's speculative. Because is that paper going to be collectible? It depends, right? Depends what happens. In other words, if he predeceases her, it's collectible paper. If he divorces her, collectible. However, if she predeceases him, so is the ksuva collectible? No, none of it. Okay, so it really is speculative, and obviously that's going to be factored into the price, and that's why the Gemara says, she's selling her ksuva b'tovas hana. Rashi over here says, basically it's a little bit of money. Right? In other words, how much is she going to get on the dollar for selling her ksuva? Less than $1. Okay, whatever the market's going to command in terms of the selling of that ksuva. Okay, good, so she sold her ksuva. Now, Igrisha, now she got a divorce. Now, what does that mean? Oh, perfect. Now it's collectible. Okay, so the person did what seems to be a great job now in terms of making an investment. A risky investment, but now it's a collectible piece of paper. Ushchiva. Now, what happens is that she died. So now, let's follow over here. And as I pointed out, it's complicated, but let's follow. So what just happened over here is that she sold her ksuva. So, but then she got a divorce, which means now that the ksuva is a collectible piece of paper. Then what happens is that she went and she died. Okay, now she has a daughter, and she only has a daughter. Now, what does the daughter stand to inherit? So the daughter stands to inherit the ksuva. The problem, of course, is it's not a problem. The reality is that she sold it. Okay, so now. Is there a way for a daughter to basically hold on to that ksuva? Now, I say ksuva right now, you understand, the daughter doesn't care about a piece of paper. In other words, what is securing that ksuva is property. And so, is there a way for the daughter to basically get that property back? Now, the answer, hopefully everyone here should say, is no. In other words, mom sold the ksuva. Okay, so, also katavale labarta. So now, what's happening over here is that we're basically looking at litigation between the buyer of the paper and the daughter over that property that's securing the ksuva. So Amalu Reb Nachman Leika Delisva Leitzo. So Reb Nachman says, you know, now it's interesting. I'm going to just zoom in on the word in the Gemara Amar Lahu. Right? Reb Nachman said to them. Well, who's he talking to? So basically, right, the way I envision it is that there's a room full of people, and basically he's saying, look, I wonder if somebody can suggest the following to her. In other words, he's basically advising her without directly advising her. So maybe somebody could suggest the following to her. And that is, Amarlu Rav Nachman, Leika Delisva Le'etza. Nah, maybe somebody should give the following advice. And that is, Teza V'tichle, L'ksuva Sadima. Ah, so you know what she could do? She could be Mochel. She could be Mochel. Because remember, what is a ksuva? It's debt. And so what do we learn? We learn that after having sold the debt, you could forgive it. Again, the ethics of it, we're going to get to. And the liability of doing that, we're going to get to. But it's debt, and you sold the debt. And now, even though you sold the debt, you can forgive. That was Shmuel. And Shmuel also said that the Yorish could forgive. Good, she's a Yorish. Ah. So Rav Nachman said, so I got this wild idea. So let her forgive the debt. Now, when she does forgive the debt, what happens now to that property? Who does it go to? It doesn't go to her. In other words, who does it go to? It goes to the husband. Okay, now. But still... In other words, remember, she's the only daughter. So eventually what's going to happen is that eventually she'll get the property. And that's exactly what the Gemara says. So Teza V'tichla L'ksuva D'ima L'gabe Avua V'tirte Mine. And then what she'll do is that she'll be Yarish from the father eventually. She's able to retain the property in going about in such a manner. So Shama Azla. So she heard this, that Rav Nachman suggested such a thing. And she did exactly that. She was Mochel. So I'm Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman afterwards had misgivings. He's like, "What did I do?" So asina atzmini korach dayanim. So basically, I behave like a lawyer. So and again, no disrespect. In other words, that's the job of a lawyer. A lawyer is to basically know the law really well, and you know, and basically work within the legal system. Okay, and you know, sometimes it's a little bit off-putting, but okay, that's what happens. So over here, basically, Rav Nachman said, "That's what I behave like." In other words, I basically through the legalities over here, I was able to go ahead and have her retain that property, despite the fact that mom sold the paper. Somebody legitimately bought that debt, and yet through this mechanisms over here, so she was able to retain the property. So me covering my server now, as far as Rav Nachman's misgivings are concerned. So the Gemara said, well, why did he, if he had misgivings, so how about this? How about then don't give the advice to begin with? So the Gemara says, me kara savra mi besar chalosis aleim, levasof savra adam chashav shani. So the first thing he thought is that, look, it's mishpacha. And the pasuk says that mi besar chalosis aleim, right, help your family out. Right, pasuk in shayau, end of the sefer. Anyway, help your family out. You have a family member, you got to help them. Okay, good. The muster to me, by the way, right now. I have a brother living in the west coast of Florida. So the fine, I invite him to, you know, to come to me. Anyway, so that's on one hand, and that's why he gave the advice. On the other hand, he thought, Adam Chashav Shani, I'm somebody who's significant, meaning some people are going to see me, and even though everything I said was within the world of Kedasa Kedin, it's, you know, it's right what I said, but people are going to see it and people are going to be like, In other words, if he behaves like that, imagine how we could behave. Okay, fine. So, Gufa. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to spend a couple more minutes with this really interesting halacha of after having sold paper, you go ahead and you mochel it. So the Gemara is going to spend a little bit more time with this halacha.
If I can sue the seller.
Oh, we're going to get there. No. We're getting there. Guf amr shma mochel shachav lechaveru machlo machul. Ve'afilu yoresh mochel. So even the yoresh could be mochel. So the so Amr Avuna Breda Rav Yeshua Vipikechu Mekakesh Leizuz Vikasav Leishtar Vishmei. So first of all, is there any kind of way of protecting and preventing after having bought the paper? Is there a way to basically protect your investment? Yes, there is a way to protect your investment, and that's the following. Go over to the Lov and say to the Lov as follows: Look, I'm your new lender. In other words, I bought the paper. Okay, but of course, in other words, because the seller of that paper has the right to be mochel, so how about this? How about we rewrite the note? Okay, in other words, we'll rewrite the note that I'm the lender, and what's in it for you? I'll throw in a couple of coins. How much money do you want? We'll just rewrite the note. Nothing changes for you. In other words, you still have the same debt, but now. I don't know. I'll give you whatever the amount of money is needed to incentivize the borrower to go ahead and to rewrite the note. Good.
But he forgave him. The debt was forgiven.
No. Before you do it beforehand. Oh. Beforehand. In other words, before. In other words, you buy the note and before. Well, you know, right away, you run to right. You run to the borrower and you say, "Look, let's rewrite this note. Right. Basically, I'll now on the new note, I'll be the lender, and now basically, good." You restructure the loan where you're now going to be the owner of that debt, and you can do that. And it's gonna cost you a little bit, but look, I imagine over here. I mean, obviously all this gets really complicated. I imagine that when you bought the debt, did you buy it? You know, 100 cents on the dollar? I imagine no. In other words, already. You know, why are you buying debt? Okay, fine. Anyway, so good. All right, and now finally, one last point to go over here with this really interesting halacha Shmuel, and that's going to be liability. Okay, so I obviously over here, I appreciate everyone's patience because everyone is tremendously offended of why in the world would you do that? You just went ahead and you sold a commodity. You sold debt. And now afterwards, after you sold it, you forgave it. And now basically the purchaser of that debt now is going to be left holding the bag. It's wrong, okay. But aside from that, meaning it's not ethically correct. But aside from that, aren't you? Isn't there any liability? So the Gemara says depends. Amar Manda Dan Dina Degarmi. So Magbi Bei Deme Shtar Amalia. And Mandalo Dan Dina Degarmi Magbi Bei Deme Nayara Balma. So the Gemara says, come, I got to see right next to me. So the okay, let's do the daf, and then afterwards we can go ahead and work out the details. So it depends on whether or not you're done dina degarmi. Okay, so let's explain this idea, and that's the following. Look, in terms of nezek, so we on the spectrum of nezek, here are the things that we know. We know that if I go ahead and I take your glasses and I break them into two, so I'm a mazik and I'm going to have to pay. That's what's called mazik biadayim. That's on one end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, there's grama. The sixth parak of Baba Kama opens up with a series of examples of grama. I'll give you one example. So one example of grama is that you have a pen of animals, and I go ahead and I break the fence, and now the animals come running out, and you lose the animals. Okay, did I do the damage? Meaning, did I actively damage? No, I didn't actively damage. That's grama. That's a classic example of grama. Indirectly because of what I did, so now you suffer damage. But I didn't actively do the damage. So you have now clearly two ends of the spectrum. And Garama Biyadayim, I'm sorry, and Nezik Biyadayim, I'm going to be fully liable. Right? That's most of Baba Kama. Right? Summed up in one sentence. You break it, you pay for it. Good. In other words, we're still going to go through the Masechta, but in other words, that's Baba Kama in a sentence. So that's Biyadayim. And now Garama indirect, you're Pater. Now I say you're Pater, by the way, obviously. Right, that's wrong. Right, and the Gemara over there says that your pater b'de'adam rechayv v'dinei shamayim. Okay, when we get to the sixth parak of Baba Kama, we're going to discuss this in more detail. Great. So you have the two ends of the spectrum, but however, in this continuum, there's some middle ground where Well, I'll give you an example. So you have a check, and what do? I tear it up, right? Why did you do that? Okay, whatever. Everyone's got issues. But in other words, good. So now, is the check itself an object of value? No. But now, obviously, you can't collect. In other words, that check allow you to collect something. So what is that? Is that mazik biyadayim, or is that grama? Or it's somewhere in the middle. So let's call it now somewhere in the middle. So we're going to have a term to use it, the Gemara's terminology, which is called garmi. Garmi is the Gemara's terminology to describe something that's not biyadayim, it's not grama, it's something in the middle. Where do the courts stand on garmi? The courts are split on this issue. Some courts collect and assume liability when it's garmi, and some courts do not. And that's what we just read in the Gemara. The Gemara says that man de dain dina de garmi, if you're the kind of court that goes ahead and prosecutes on garmi cases. So over here, after having sold the paper and having forgiven the loan, so now this falls into the category of garmi. And so therefore the court that does prosecute on these cases is going to prosecute over here. And the courts that don't prosecute on these cases is not going to prosecute over here. Basically, what the Gemara is telling us is that this is somewhere in between. This is not biyadayim. This is not grama. This more falls under the category of garmi. And yesh v'yesh. Some courts are going to find you liable. Some courts won't. Depends. Hava uvda. And v'kaf yirafim l'rav ashi v'ag bebe ki kishur l'tzame. And the Gemara says, I'll just give you one case study. And one case study was that the case came in front of Rav Ashi. Rav Ram happened to have been there. And Rav Ram says to Rav Ashi, what did he do? He sold debt and then he forgave it after he sold it? Okay, you know what you're going to do? You're going to prosecute him. And you're going to hold him liable. And V'agbe kikishur l'tzame. Kikishur l'tzame is an expression of the Gemara. Basically, I'm not giving literal translation, but every last penny. In other words, whatever loss you caused because you forgave the loan, so you're going to have to pay every last penny. Okay, good. So, Adkan, that takes us to the end of a really interesting but difficult discussion of the Gemara, and that after having sold debt, you still have the right to forgive it. So number one, I try to explain how that works, how you have the right to forgive it, meaning after you have sold the debt, so you still retain any kind of ownership whatsoever over that debt, and you could forgive it. Okay, so I quoted Rabbi Natan at the beginning of the discussion in terms of how does it work. We saw a case regarding a woman who sold her ksuva. So basically, it's selling debt. And then after having a divorce and died, so Rav Nachman gave advice to her daughter, you know what? You don't have to lose that property. That's securing the ksuva. You can still retain it. How? By forgiving the debt. So Rav Nachman actually advised somebody to do that, which in of itself was fascinating. Afterwards, he had misgivings of giving such advice. But anyway, that was number two. And finally, number three, so is there a way of, after having buying the debt, can you protect yourself? Sure. In other words, go to the borrower and say, let's rewrite the note, where now I become the lender. So we'll rewrite the note. What's in it for you? What's it called? It goes into my pocket and I'll take out some money and I'll give you some money. And good. And then finally, the last thing we discussed is that if you went ahead and sold and then forgave the note, so is there liability? Gemara says, depends which court you go to. Okay. We continue in the Gemara. Let me set up our Gemara over here with some basic facts, okay? Number one, in a case of a loan, okay, so how do I get paid back? Principally, ideally, with money, which makes all the sense in the world. What did I lend you? Money. So what would I like back as payment? Money. Now, again, in the case of default, so what's going to happen is that the land, obviously, which is securing the loan, so I'm going to go ahead and take ownership of the land. Good. But that's not ideal. In other words, I really wanted money. I gave you money, I wanted money. So ideally, you're entitled to money. Okay, that's number one. Number two is that if you're a mazik, so over here as a mazik, so you are, how do you get paid? If you are the victim of damage, so you can get paid. Here there's no ideal. You can get paid in money, you can get paid in property. If, in fact, you get paid in property, so you get the best property, right? The properties are graded on grade A, B, C, so you're going to get A property if you are the victim of nezek. And and as far as the worker is concerned, so the workers get paid in money. In other words, there's no alternative when it comes to a worker, meaning the worker is not going to come and he's not going to take property. In other words, the employer's obligation to the employee is money. Okay, good.
Does the base then evaluate which property is which, or do they take the guy's word?
It seems like from the Gemara that they had a kind of like a, it was self-evident, like which properties are A, B, and C. I'm not sure about the process of grading properties. Amar Amem Mishmei de Rav Chama. Okay, with all that said, and Haiman de Ikalek Suvasisha Bachov. Okay, so right now, so you have multiple creditors. You have a standard creditor, and you also have Suvasisha. Now, Suvasisha is also, she's also a creditor. But while they're married, there's nothing to pay. But after death or divorce, so now you have to pay. So the person's got multiple creditors. Vizle Ari, Vizle Zuze. And what does he have? He has land and he has Zuzim. So lebalchov mesalkina le bezuze ulisha mesalkina le baara haikidina vahaikidina. Okay, so for your creditor, so you're going to pay him in money. Meaning, right now you have money and property, right? And only enough money to satisfy one of your obligations, and then property for the other obligation. So what do you do? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what you do. This one's easy. So for the creditor, you pay him back in money, because ideally, that's how you pay back your creditors. Isn't your wife also a creditor? Meaning, in the event, when I say your wife, by the way, I mean your ex-wife. So isn't she also a creditor? Yeah, but the Tsuvas Isha is a creditor, but it's a reduced creditor. It's not a classic creditor. Why? I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Because when you married her and you wrote her a ksuva, did she give you money? No. In other words, you're indebting yourself, but obviously it's not, that indebtedness is not against actual money that was given to you. In other words, the ksuva is there in order to ensure and to protect her. Okay, good. So because she's not a classic creditor, so therefore, if you got money and you got properties, so with your actual creditor, so you'll satisfy them with money, because that's the din. That's the ideal. And then for the woman, for the ex-wife, so you'll give her the property. Okay, that one's easy, but here's where it gets a little more complicated. V'ilo ika lachad ara v'lo chazia lachad. So over here now, in terms of debt collection, so what do you got? One piece of property that you can only either give to your creditor or to your ex-wife. So who's going to get it? Alan, we know the answer. So the v'ilo ika lachad ara v'lo chazia lachad. So the bachov yavin alei lisha lo yavin alei. So over here, what you're going to do is you're going to give it to your creditor, and you're not going to give it to your ex-wife. Now, the Gemara says, now why? That's interesting. So my tama, so yosem imashi isha rotza lisa, isha rotza linase. Because a woman really has this innate drive to get married, and just because in this particular case, we're going to go ahead and favor the creditor over the ex-wife, that's not going to be any cause for alarm for women in terms of their interest in getting married. Meaning, what the Gemara does all the time, and it's really hard, is bounce. And that is that, remember just a couple of days ago we said, do you know why you write Iksuva? To give her a state of mind, assurances that she'll be taken care of, right? Otherwise, women are not going to get married, right? I'm going to get married, and you're going to divorce me, and I'm going to be left with nothing. No, in fact, we just learned a couple of days ago that Shimon Meshetach had to make the following takana. And that is that all your properties now are going to be mortgaged against that ksuva. Okay. And again, what it does is it gives her peace of mind. Good. So on one hand, we're really interested in giving her peace of mind. On the other hand, we also know that she really wants to get married. So it's a balance. So over here, within this balance, in this limited scenario where you have limited funds and you have a creditor and you have a ksuva sisha, and in this limited scenario where, with this one piece of land, I'm going to give it to my creditor, not to the ex-wife, that's not going to be enough to disrupt the balance. And on top of that, I'll also add that Rashi points out over here is that if she's first in line, meaning if her ksuva is older than the debt, here, Ben. If the ksuva is older than the debt, obviously she's first in line, and obviously she's going to collect first. The discussion we're having right now is only when the dates match up on her debt and the creditor's debt. Okay.
So is this really just to protect people from wanting to lend money because of you.
Perfect, perfect. Alan said it perfectly, and that's exactly what Rashi says. And that is that why are we so interested in protecting the creditor? Because what we want to do is that we want to encourage people to lend money. Perfect.
And
perfect.
If she was alive, if she was there first, he would know that she's there.
Yeah.
He would know.
Absolutely.
Ketubah has a lien first.
Perfect. 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 Well, okay. Perfect. Perfectly said. Okay. Excellent. Excellent supplement. So the we protect the creditors because we want lending,
right.
And then the chachamim want to promote lending. Okay. Continuing the Gemara, Malei Rav Papa LeRav Chama Vade Damris Mishmei DeRava. So Rav Papa says to Rav Chama the following. Here's what I heard. I heard Rava say. Okay, generally speaking, you know where this is going, right? Didn't Rava say the following? And the Gemara is going to say, "Let's no, I don't think that's what he said." Okay, but anyway, Haiman Damaske Bezos of Yisle Ara Avasabachov VeKatav Mine VeAmerle Shkol MeAra. So Amrin Alei Zil Zaben Ad VeAisa Havle. So I heard Rava. I heard the following story, where that is that there was a creditor and he went to his borrower and the borrower defaulted, but the borrower did have property, and you know what Rava did? Rava made the borrower sell the property in order now to get the cash in order to satisfy the creditor. Now again, money's ideal, but under normal circumstances, if the borrower doesn't have money, so you just simply assume ownership of the property. You foreclose. Okay, so that's normally what happens. But I heard Rava say that it was the borrower who was required to sell the property in order to raise the money to pay back the debt. And I don't think that's necessary. So zil shkol me'ara amrin alei zil zaben at. I read that already. Va'isa havlei. So amr lei. So Rav Chama says back to Rav Papa. Lo, no. Rava didn't say that. So emeli gufadu of the hechahava. He says, can I get some more details, please? So then we can go ahead and figure out what Rava was talking about. So amr lei tola ma'osa ba'vikochavim. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what happened. What happened is that the creditor knocked on the borrower's door and said, look, loan is due and new. So the borrower said, look, I'm really sorry. I've got no money. I got property. So you'll just simply foreclose, but I don't got money. So the lender says to the borrower, I'm looking at money right over there, right over there, right? What do you call that? So the borrower said, that's not my money. That money, right? That I'm holding that money for somebody else. It happens to be a non-Jew, whatever. I'm holding that money for somebody else. Okay, and what the borrower did at that point in time is he told a big lie. It wasn't true. He had the money. So Rava said to the borrower at this point in time, like, enough. In other words, that's a lot of nonsense from you. And so in that circumstance, Rava said to the borrower, look, you're being silly and you're playing games. So Rava says, under these circumstances, so whatever money you have, obviously you're going to use that to pay the debt. That's not enough yet. The property, you're going to go ahead and sell the property. So over there, when Rava was good and fed up with this guy was playing games, in that circumstance, so Rava required him to sell the properties. But under normal circumstances, in a default of a loan, so you simply foreclose on the property. Okay. Amalei Rav Kahana L'Rav Papa L'Ditcha Damar Prias Bachov Mitzvah. So let's ask one more question regarding the paying back of a loan. Okay, the paying back of a loan is a mitzvah. Okay? In other words, aside from the fact that it is a financial obligation, but also you're fulfilling a mitzvah. Now, it's interesting, by the way, the Gemara just very casually describes it as a mitzvah. Where is it found in the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah? Unclear. Unclear. Rashi writes over here, Pirz Bachov Mitzvah. I'm looking at the Rashi, four lines from the bottom. Mitzvah, Allah, Lefrochavo, La'ameis, Devarav. So Rashi says it's a function of, you got to keep your word. And keeping your word is a mitzvah? Rashi says yes. Dichsiv hin tzedek, shehein shocha tzedek, v'lav shocha tzedek. So it's based on the following. The Torah says that you have to have fair weights and measures. Meaning that when you have a scale and you have a weight that says a pound, it has to be a pound. In other words, what you can't do is you can't cheat your buyers. Okay, good. But on top of that, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Rashi here is quoting it, right in the middle of the Masechta. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia says that hin tzedek can also be understood as hein tzedek. When you say yes, you got to keep your word. And when you say no, you got to keep your word. You got to be a man of your word. That's a mitzvah of the Torah. So if you borrow money and you say you're going to pay back, you got to pay back. Okay, good. That's how Rashi describes it, as a mitzvah in the Torah. Good. So it's a mitzvah to pay back your loan. So Now, when it comes to mitzvah, so why don't you say the following? So Amar lo nichali David mitzvah. So my. So let's say the creditor comes to the borrower and says, okay, now it's time to pay back your loan. So why can't the borrower say, look, it's a mitzvah for me to pay back my loan. How about this? I'm not in the mood to do mitzvahs today. Okay, so Amar le tanina. So he says, okay, we have a response for that. And that is, b'medvar mamor and b'mitzvah lo sasei. So when can a person elect not to do mitzvahs? Meaning we all bechir chavshis, we all have free will. And if we don't want to do a mitzvah, okay, it's a bad decision, but people can elect to do so. So when it comes to a lo sasei, if a person elects not to do a lav in the Torah, fine. So in other words, fine. In other words, fine meaning that we're not going to be in a position to be able to coerce him to do anything about it. Ava b'mitzvah sasei could go and shomer lo asei sukkah veino osa lula veino osa. But when it comes to mitzvah sasei, so by a mitzvah sasei, so what's the halacha? The halacha is that if a person is refusing to do a positive commandment, so Basin can go ahead and get involved and makan osa asher teitz nafsho and beat him until the until his soul departs him. Okay, now, okay, it sounds pretty strong, right? It sounds pretty strong. But in other words, let's right now we could keep it nice and simple. Yeah. They're right. There is a way for Basin to intervene and to get involved when it comes to a person and his mitzvah's essay. Right, it does speak to, right, we've spoken about this a little bit in the past, it does speak to, right, the nature of a lo sasei, the nature of an asei, that when it comes to an asei, that even though there's no punishment for the willful violation of an asei, however, in terms of incentivizing, in terms of motivating, right, Basin can get involved. Okay, anyway, so the over here, the priyas chov, it's a mitzvah sasei, it's a positive commandment. Oh, you right, what's the problem? The problem is right now you don't want to fulfill your positive commandment? Oh, we have a rule for that. Okay, and so there you call in the basin and say, hey, he doesn't want to fulfill his positive commandment to paying back a debt. Okay, good. They'll motivate him.
Because otherwise you will never have another chance to make your...
Yeah, right, correct. If you really kill him, so then right. No, correct. Perfect. Okay, so let's go over the following, and that is Kinyan Mashiach. Okay, there's a lot going on in today's daf, and I'm going through today's daf way too quickly, but Kinyan Mashiach means is that what I'm going to do is I'm going to take an item and I want to acquire the item, so you have to do a Maisa Kinyan. You have to do a clear demonstration that I am the owner. So the best thing to do is what's called Hagbah. Now I know this is an audio medium for the listeners, but the people that are here get to watch me do Hagbah. And that is I lift the item off the ground. Okay, everyone saw that? So that is by far and away one of the best mechanisms of Kinyan, because I'm clearly showing demonstration of ownership by picking it up off the ground. How about if I pull on an item? Now these keys are a terrible example over here because... I could just as easily lift it. But in other words, Mashiach would definitely be applicable for things that are large. Okay, but anyway, but King and Mashiach. So how is that as a means of acquisition? Second rate. Okay, and why do I describe it as second rate? Because as opposed to Hagbah works anywhere and everywhere. I'm in your house and I'm buying something. And after having paid for it, by the way, the money, interestingly enough, may not be a means of acquisition. Okay, all right. Machlokas, Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish. Good. Anyway, but if I'm in your house, I pick the item up, I acquired it, even when I'm in your property. Okay, because Hagbah is really good. But if I'm doing Mashiach, if I'm just pulling it in my direction, it's not going to work on your premises.
It works for animals, though, right?
Again, it depends on where we are. Okay, we're learning now. It depends on where we are. So if I'm in your property, no. If I'm in a Rishus Arabim, also no. You have to be in a more neutral area. Like a Carmelist, Sidei Rishus Arabim. You have to, right, a Simta. Yep, okay, good. So Mashiach works in these, only in these limited circumstances. So, with that stated, we are on Peivav Amud Beis, top line. So, B'aminei Rami Barachama Mirav Chista Harei Zikitech V'lo Tizkar Shibo Ela La'achr Shloshim Yom. So, here's your get. And, but, I only want it to be effective 30 days from now. Okay, so delayed transactions. Okay, we just talked about this over Rosh Hashanah. So delayed transactions, I gave the example, I'll do it again right now, and that is, every time you bank, it's a delayed transaction. Banks love delayed transactions. Oh, they can't get enough of delayed transactions. Right? I'm transferring my money now. Oh, but the person can't touch it until tomorrow. Why? Okay. It's called banking.
Are they still technically married?
Huh? Wait one second. It's a fair question. So over here, so the Gemara now is gonna ask the following, and that is a delayed transaction, which is you'll do the Mashiach now on the get. But its effect is not going to be for 30 days from now. Okay. So Alan's question is excellent, but let's just right now focus on the Gemara's point, which is where did you do it? Where did you put it? You put it Seder Rishus Harabim. Okay. Now Seder Rishus Harabim is hard to describe because we don't live in a world of Rishus Yachad Rishus Harabim. We live in a world where after you walk out of your house, right, halachically, what is that area? It's so hard to describe, right? Carmelis, okay, it's probably the best thing. But again, right, this is not a Shabbos discussion, it's a Kinyanim discussion, and the definitions may change a little bit, but regardless. So, Amar Leina Mugareshes, Midravushmol, Deravushmol, Damitavayu, Vahushit, Sabur Munachim, Rishos Harabim. So, we go back to a discussion that we had earlier regarding collecting debt from property that was inherited but was off-site. And where was it? It was in a Rishos HaRabim. Okay, but the point is that Vitzita Rishos HaRabim ki Rishos HaRabim Dama. Meaning that Tzita Rishos HaRabim is going to have the same status as Rishos HaRabim. So again, Tzita Rishos HaRabim, I'm going to call it a sidewalk. It's just a reference point. I'm not sure if it's a good example of Tzita Rishos HaRabim, but it's a little bit off the side of the road. So the Gemara right now is arguing that Tzita Rishos HaRabim has the same status as Rishos HaRabim, and therefore, it's not going to work because Mishicha is not going to work in the Rishos HaRabim. Ad Rabba, Migureshes Midrav Nachman, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava, Baravua, Melech Averim, Meshach, Parazev, Lo Tia, Kenuyalach, Ad Lach, Rishoshim Yom, Kana, Afila, Omedes Ba'agam. So the Gemara says, look, we have delayed transactions by a cow. I sold you a cow on a delay. You'll pull it now, and but it won't be acquired until after 30 days. So it will work even if on day 30, where's the cow right now? He's in Agam. He's in a swamp. So the Gemara says, "My love, Hainu Agam, Hainu Tzidir Rishos Harabim." Now the Gemara is trying to make a equation, and that is that Tzidir Rishos Harabim and Agam are the same, right? The Gemara says, "Okay, but it's not." So lo agam lechud v'tzidah v'shus harabim lechud. The Gemara just simply deflects, and the Gemara says, "No, it's not the same. They're different." Okay, and it's hard to process these Gemaras because, right, we really don't know what an agam looks like, and we don't know what a tzidah v'shus harabim looks like. But effectively, what I understand what the Gemara is trying to wrap its head around, and that is that Mashicha, being the inferior kinyan, it certainly doesn't work in a Rishos HaRabim. So when you have areas that are less than a Rishos HaRabim, so is Mashiach going to work in those areas? Agam, yes. Tzidah Rishos HaRabim, open for discussion. Eged Amrei, the Gemara gives us another version of this. Amrei Megureshes, Midrav Nachman, Tzidah Rishos HaRabim, Ka'agam Dami. So the Gemara says in the second version, the answer is, yeah, the Gerishin works. Why? Because it was in Tzidah Rishos HaRabim. It's like an Agam. So malav hainu rishos harabim hainu tzidah rishos harabim lo tzidah rishos harabim lechud v'tzidah rishos harabim lechud. And again, the Gemara's deflection over here is that in the second version, the tzidah rishos harabim is not like a rishos harabim, but rather it's going to be equivalent to a nagam. Again, what we just saw in the Gemara is basically the Gemara is unsure as to how to classify tzidah rishos harabim. If it has the status of Rishos HaRabim, Mashiach cannot be done over there. And if it has the status of, of an Agam, so then Mashiach can be done over there. Okay, good. All right. Let's go one more station to station for today. We are at the Mishnah. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah.
So
So the Rebbe Eliezer Omer Afilo Al Pilcha Ve'Al Isasa. Okay, so let's say after having getting married, so you say to the woman, good, so welcome to the family. And oh, by the way, the shop, you'll mind the shop. Okay, good. The let's say you have multiple stores, or whatever the case is. Or, alternatively, I'm going to make you CEO of the house. Huh? Whatever. However the arrangement was made. And now the following. Now as far as general workers go, so if, let's say, you are a little bit concerned that there's a little bit of skimming off the top, so what can you do? So you can go to your worker and you can have him make a shvua and make him make an oath that he didn't skim anything off the top. Okay. Which, you know, may or may not be effective, but regardless. Okay, and then so over here.
Why do you have to do that if it's an avera to do that?
Okay.
Why would you have to make him swear?
It's a way to try to incentivize him not to. In other words, if he knows that he's going to have to swear, so it's one more layer, one more barrier that's going to hopefully help him keep him in line. Yeah. Okay. Right. So Amoshev is Ishtoch and Vanis, so Shemina Petrapa, Arizem Mashpil, Kos Man Shirtza. So what we're learning in our Mishnah now is that even though it's your wife, and of course it's nice to think that you're going to have a little bit more confidence with your wife, but over here she's serving now as two roles. One role is that she's your wife, and the second role, of course, is that she's minding the shop. So in other words, from the standpoint of she's minding the shop, she's a worker. Okay, I know, and she's your wife, but right now you can treat her like a worker, and you can if you feel that, you know. How come the register? What's going on over there? How come there's so little money in the register? Okay, good. So you can have her make a shvua. Good. So that's the Tanakhama's position, and that's good. Meaning, okay, is it going to make for a functional marriage? Okay, good. Who knows? But Rabbi Eliezer Omer Afilo Apilcha Valisasa. So and Rabbi Eliezer says, I'm going to go much further than that. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer goes way to the extreme. And Rabbi Lazar says, she doesn't have to even be your worker. Meaning that, right to you, she's sewing, she's baking bread in the house. And so you're wondering, in other words, I gave you a lot of money to buy bread. What's going on over here? So Rabbi Lazar says is that under those circumstances, you can have her make a shvua, that she's not playing around with the money. Even out of the context of minding the shop. So, the Gemara's reaction immediately is, Rabbi Eliezer, like, how extreme is Rabbi Eliezer? Meaning, is it that the husband comes home and finds that, like, I opened up the fridge, there's not a lot of food over there. What's happening? What are you doing with the money? So is Rabbi Eliezer basically saying, right now, let's go to court, you're going to make a shvua? Or, and that's obviously the most extreme version, or maybe it's not that extreme. Maybe it's Ali Day Gilgal. Meaning that in the event that she's making a shvua, so you know the idea is that once you're making a shvua, so you can roll on other shvuas on top of that. That's shvua Ali Day Gilgal. Okay, so is that what Rabbi Eliezer is saying? So, which is obviously less extreme. So Tashma Amr Lola Rabbi Eliezer in Adam Dara im Nachash Bikfifa. So when the Chachamim react to Rabbi Eliezer, we didn't hear this in the Mishnah. We only heard this in the Braisa. But it's fine. In other words, it's a Braisa. And when the Chachamim heard Rabbi Eliezer, they said, that's ridiculous. It's like living with a snake in a basket. In other words, you're obviously making this an unbelievably contentious relationship where the husband can come home and suspect his wife of fooling around with the money and have her make a shvua. Who lives like that? It's like living with a snake. So, so if we understood Rabbi Eliezer in the most extreme version, so you understand why that triggered the Chachamim to say that's ridiculous. But so the Gemara says, but if Rabbi Eliezer wasn't that extreme, if Rabbi Eliezer just simply said that Ayide Gilgal, she's already making a shvua on something else. And now you're like, wait, as long as we're here, now, right, well, I gave $100 last week to go to Publix and you didn't seem to come home with $100. In other words, can we add on another shvua? So if it's just an add-on, it's not as extreme. It wouldn't trigger the chachamim, right? The Gemara says no. Even if it's a less extreme version, it would still trigger the chachamim. So my nafkalimina de amrale came into dika dayakta basraiku lehai. So lamatina da dor badach. No, because still it's gonna create dysfunction. Even if it's aliyde gilgul, it's gonna create dysfunction. Right? In other words, they're in the courtroom, she's making a shvua, and he says, and let's pile on right now. Okay, no good. Tashma hare shlo patar it's ishto mina neder umina shvua voshiva chenvanis or shemina petrapa. I raise a mashbia because man shiirza. So lo shiva chenvanis v'lo mina petrapa inu yochol hashbia. So again, the brayso over here, same idea as our mishnah, which is if she's working the shop, she can make a shvua. If she's not working the shop, she's staying at home, no shvua. And then Rebbe Lazar Omer, Alpha Pishlo, Shiva Chanvanis, Velo Mina Petrapa, Hariz Mashpia, Kol Zman Shiirtse. She'in Lecha Isha, Shalon Asis Apetrapa, Sha'achas Bechayabala, Apilcha Valisasa. So, and Rebbe Lazar over here, in this Brisa version, couldn't say it any clearer. Basically, Rebbe Eliezer says, I'm treating her like a worker, even at home. In other words, because she's being given money, she's entrusted with money, she's making financial decisions, I'm treating her like a worker even in the house. And therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, even at home, she's making a shvua whenever he wants it. And on that, Amar lo, inadam darim nachash bikfifa. Okay, so what do we gain by this brisa? We couldn't have heard it any clearer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, anytime he wants. The most extreme version of Rabbi Eliezer. So shma mina, l'chaz chila shma mina. Okay, good. Now we know what Rabbi Eliezer held, but obviously we don't pass like Rabbi Eliezer, but we have clarity on Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, this is a good place to stop. Okay, let's recap our daf today. Our first part of the daf today, really an amazing discussion regarding after having sold paper, the ability to forgive the loan after you sold the paper. So various aspects of that halacha. This is a Shmuel halacha of forgiving debt even after having you sold after having sold it. We talked about how is that effective. We talked about the morality of it. We talked about the liability in doing so. We talked about protecting yourself against debt forgiveness. Okay, good. So those were the first parts of today's daf here on Pei Vav. Then we went on Pei Vav Amid Aleph. So we talked about satisfying your creditor. So property, money. Ideally money, not property. What if you have multiple creditors? One's a creditor and the other one is your ex-wife. So who's first in line? So assuming the dates are even, so the creditor is going to be first in line. And Alan gave the correct explanation earlier, and that is because we want to promote lending. And so therefore, we want to give assurances to the lenders that they are in fact going to get paid back. Delayed transactions, one more round of discussion of delayed transactions regarding a get and the issues of Mashicha and doing a Mashicha in Tzidei Rishos HaRabim and whether or not that's going to be effective or not effective. And you saw the Gemara basically play the sides on that issue. Okay, pun intended. Okay, and finally, your wife is working the store. So generally speaking, you can have your employees make a Shavua and that's hopefully to keep them in line, make sure they don't skim off the top. So if your wife is working the store, can you have her make a shvua? Yeah, as long as she's working the store, yes. In other words, now you can treat her like an employee and have her make a shvua to make sure she doesn't skim off the top. But what in the house? In other words, where she's also making financial decisions? Tanakama says no, not in the house. And Rebbe Lazar says yes, even in the house. How extreme was Rebbe Lazar? What did we learn? Very.
It probably wasn't that.